If you've been with us, we've been going through the life of Jesus. It's been months so far and months to come. Spoiler alert, there's a lot still to go through. Okay. So we've talked about a lot of stuff. We've seen stories that are in two or three Gospels. Last week we saw our first story that was in all four, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And that was the feeding of the group of 5,000 men plus women and children. Jesus did a miracle and then had a lot of talking back and forth. Today we're going to be back to a story that's just in the book of John. John is unique as all the Gospels are. They each told Jesus' story in their own way, their own personality to their own original audience for their own purpose. And John did something unique at the end of John. If you ever read John, you're like, why did you put that in there? John tells us at the end, if you go all the way to the end of the book of John, he says, these things are written. The things that I wrote to you, I wrote so you would believe that Jesus is the Messiah and that by believing you'd have life in his name. I want you to understand who Jesus is, what he was all about, and I want you to get what he's offering. So that's what John is doing. And we've seen that in the last few weeks. Where John has told us stories that are unique to his account. A few weeks ago, we saw the story of Nicodemus, the religious leader that came to Jesus at night and talked to him. John told us that story. Then he told us the story of the woman at the well. Somebody, the Samaritan woman, Jesus meets with her one-on-one unexpectedly and gives her a message of hope. Then a couple weeks ago, Debbie spoke and she told us, she went through the story with us of the healing of the man at the pool of Bethesda. He'd been sick for 38 years. And was waiting for somebody to come along and help him and heal him, and Jesus did. And that's kind of where we left off in John. And we're actually going to pick up there, and then we're going to go through a lot. Because what John does in the next few chapters after that is, for the most part, John stops telling stories. Again, he was telling stories for a reason, to get us to believe. And he says, you know what, I'm going to take a step back from the story, back from being the narrator so much, and I'm going to let Jesus do a lot of the talking. And when I say a lot of talking, I mean a lot of the talking over the next few chapters that we're going to see together. So we're going to look at a lot together, but this is John saying, I want you to hear it from Jesus, and hopefully you'll get it that way. So let's pick it up. You can follow along in your Bibles or on the screen. We're going to start in John chapter 5, verse 16. Before I get into that, we're going to remember we're following up the healing of the man at the pool of Bethesda. And Jesus made a mistake, not really, but in the eyes of the Jewish leaders, because healing was good, but the day he picked to do it was horrible, horrible timing on Jesus' part. I mean, why could you not heal him at another time? He healed him on the Sabbath day. And we've seen this before. It bothers them because the Sabbath day was the special day. You're not supposed to do anything on the Sabbath. And so they are upset. As usual, verse 16 of John chapter 5, John says, so the Jewish leaders began harassing Jesus for breaking the Sabbath rules. How dare you, sir? Who do you think you are? But Jesus replied, my Father is always working, and so am I. Jesus is like, look, I know what the scriptures say. And you have this vision of God that says God every 7 days just sits back in heaven and is like, wow, I wish I could do something today, but I can't. I'm tired or I have to rest or whatever. And Jesus is like, can I tell you something? I know my dad, okay? I see him work all the time because the Sabbath was put for the good of people. My Father is always working for the good of people. And you know what? So am I. Because what dad does, that's what I'm going to do. And they understood exactly. If you ever wonder if Jesus knew who he was, claimed to be who he said he was, here is where you know he did, because A, he did, and B, the people talking to him get it. Verse 18, so the Jewish leaders tried all the harder to find a way to kill him. For he not only broke the Sabbath, gasp, he called God his Father, and thereby making himself equal with God. And they get it, but they don't like it, and they are very upset with Jesus right now. And there's a lot of back and forth, and we're going to skip a lot for time, even though we're going to see a lot. But Jesus jumps down, we're going to jump down to verse 39. Jesus makes a statement to them. He says, you search the scriptures. You Jewish leaders, you search the scriptures because you think they give you eternal life. But the scriptures point to me, yet you refuse to come to me to receive this life. He's like, look, I want to commend you on something. You are students. You are searching the scriptures, and that is fantastic. But the problem is, like so many times he's told us before, excuse me, they have the verse, but they miss the point. They had the verses, but they missed the point. He's like, you're doing all this study. That's fantastic, but you're missing. It's telling you about me. The thing that you're looking for, this eternal life, this God move in your world and in your life, you're waiting for it and you're searching and say, what do I have to do to get it? And he's like, it's right here. But you just refuse to come to me to get the thing you want. Next in John's story is what we saw last week, the feeding of the group of people, the 5,000 men, women, and children. And all the back and forth that came with that. If you missed that, go back and listen to that online. The next story that happens, John tells us that there's a festival in Jerusalem. There were multiple of these throughout the year. And devout religious people that followed that tradition would make pilgrimages to Jerusalem. It was what they did as part of just their religious experience. So Jesus would go. It was habit for him to go. Had been from childhood. He went with his parents. We had seen that. Jesus would typically go, but now he's got to figure out what to do because they want to kill him, and they're serious. This is not, if you keep going, you know, you get kids, I'm going to get you. No, this is serious. They really want to do this. And Jerusalem is the epicenter of their power, their authority. It's where they're the strongest and able to do things like that, and he's got to figure out what to do. Finally, he decides to go, but he's going to do it kind of on the down low. He's not going to let anybody know he's going. He's not going to make a big deal about it, let the crowds get around. He's going to go, but keep it quiet. And he does. And it's a good thing because John tells us in verse 11 of chapter 7, the Jewish leaders at this festival tried to find him at the festival and kept asking if anyone had seen him. There was a lot of grumbling about him among the crowds, all these crowds of people for this festival. Some argued he's a good man. But others said, he's nothing but a fraud who deceives the people. But no one had the courage to speak favorably about him in public, for they were afraid of getting in trouble with the Jewish leaders. So all of this is going on. These leaders are so, it is very obvious that they don't like this guy. So everybody's kind of on pins and needles, but they're still trying to wrestle down the question. The question that John's going to walk us through, Jesus explaining through the whole next few verses we're going to read. And the question is, who is Jesus? Who is he? Who is this strange rabbi that comes and says things that we don't understand and does things not the way we think they should be done? Who is Jesus? So Jesus is at the festival and he's kept it quiet. But as so often we see, I think Jesus' heart just breaks for the people. Because imagine, they're all here for this festival. They're all here searching for something. They're following their religion because they're hoping to see God do something amazing in their world, but in their life. And that's what they're here looking for. And Jesus' heart just breaks and turns with compassion. And midway through the festival, he's like, you know what, I got to keep it somewhat quiet, but I can't do everything. So he begins to teach. He finds a place in the temple. There were always places that you could do that as a rabbi. And he starts teaching groups of people. And that goes on for a couple days. And finally, John tells us in verse 37, on the last day, the climax of the festival, Jesus stood and shouted, not the way to keep it quiet, but Jesus just can't hold it anymore. He stood and shouted to the crowds, anyone who is thirsty may come to me. Anyone who believes in me may come and drink. For the scriptures declare rivers of living water will flow from his heart. Jesus is like, I can't take it anymore. I've just got to tell them. I've got to tell them that everything that they are looking for, I have. And it's a harken back, if you were with us, when Jesus told the woman at the well, you're thirsty, you're coming for water. Let me give you living water. And there's so much symbolism in his choice of water at this festival that we don't have time for. But he's saying to these people, he's like, look, you're here and you're looking and you're seeking God and you're seeking a move and you know that there's something not right and you don't know what to do about it. And I'm telling you, come to me. Will you just come to me and I will give you what you need? Well, as you can imagine, if you've been trying to keep it quiet and then you stand up in the middle of the crowd and start shouting, people know you're there. And the Jewish leaders all of a sudden are, hey, we don't have to ask where he is, because he's right there. And so now they're in the middle of a festival. And they don't want to get their pious hands dirty either. So they send guards to go arrest Jesus. Go get him and bring him back to us. Okay? So the guards go, and this is hilarious, because the guards go, they're sent to go do a job, and they get close, and maybe they're waiting for the right time because they don't want to get hit by the crowds that like Jesus or are listening. So they're waiting for their time, and in the middle of it, they start listening to him. And they're like, that's good. Kind of like, and they get to a spot where they decide they just can't do it. They can't do it. So they go back, because you know how it is. If you, your boss ever give you a job to do and you don't do it and you still have to go back to the boss and explain that you didn't do it, in that uncomfortable situation, they are about to walk right in the middle of it. So here's what happens. John tells us, verse 45. When the temple guards returned without having arrested Jesus, so imagine they're all in their council room, the doors open, the guards walk in, and they're kind of looking like, you're missing somebody. The leading priests and Pharisees demanded, why didn't you bring him in? You had one job and you blew it. Why didn't you do it? This is funny to me. Verse 46, we have never heard anyone speak like this. Okay, this is infuriating. Imagine you're one of the Jewish leaders. They already don't like Jesus. So the fact that they did not bring him is a problem. Also, these are people who talk. Part of their job is to talk and communicate about spiritual things. And here's the guards that are always on their side going and saying, have you heard that guy? He's good. Dare I say, he's better than you. So not only are they upset at Jesus, not only did they not bring Jesus, now here they're coming back and saying, I gotta tell you, he's better than you. And they're just incensed. Verse 47, have you been led astray too? The Pharisees mocked, because usually when we feel like we're in the wrong, we like to mock other people. Is there a single one of us, rulers or Pharisees, who believes in him? One. This foolish crowd follows him, but they are ignorant of the law and God's curse is on them. Like, is that the way you want your leaders to talk about the people they follow? Is that the way you want your boss to talk about you? These people are stupid. It's like, whoa. I mean, that's what they're doing. All of this is going on. But in the middle of this, this tension, this angry thing, when they say, is there one of us? Well, there is. And he's got to decide what to do. He's somebody that we've met before. Verse 50, John says, then Nicodemus, the leader who had met with Jesus earlier, spoke up. So he's in the room. Remember, he came to Jesus at night, probably because he was afraid of getting in trouble. Well, now he is in the middle of this group, and they're like, is there one of us? And he's kind of like, well, you see, what happened was, but he's not ready yet to speak up all the way. So he's got to figure out, how can I say something? And he comes up with a really great point, verse 51. Nicodemus says, is it legal to convict a man before he is given a hearing? He asked. Great question, by the way. He's like, look, I mean, you guys all seem to have made up your mind about him. Have you ever listened to him? Subtly, you know, without saying it, I've listened to him, and man, I think there's something there. Or just saying, the guards have obviously listened and something happened to them of what they heard. Maybe we should just not arrest him. Maybe just, why don't we could go together and go hear him. We could get front row tickets. I bet you we could get tickets. Or just we'll show up, whatever it is. You know, I bet you if you went to him at night, I bet you you'd find an audience. Whatever Nicodemus says, and you'd like to hope that there's a voice of reason in the room and it changes things. However, it does not happen. Verse 52, they replied, are you from Galilee too? Search the scriptures and see for yourself. No prophet ever comes from Galilee. Like, the prejudice, not just toward outsiders. We've already seen how disdainful they are of people that aren't whatever. They look at him and like, are you from the wrong side of the tracks, dude? I mean, literally, that's what they're saying. Like, are you one of those people? The harshness and the anger they're bringing to Nicodemus, who is a learned, respected religious teacher, and they are ready to dismiss him out of hand for daring to say, maybe we should listen to him. And it's just, they are not ready or willing to hear. And then my favorite thing about this whole thing, because again, we're in this room, imagine all of these people, they are angry, they are fired up, they're yelling at the guards, they're saying horrible things about the people that they lead, they're yelling at each other, all of this anger in the room, and what happens next? Verse 53, then the meeting broke up and everybody went home. Like, what? Like, I'm going home. It's so weird. Maybe they were just hungry, you know? Maybe they were hangry and they realized it's like, but it's just nothing happens. No, let's all go get them ourselves. Nothing. They just go home. Like, it's weird. Now, here is where I would love to tell you a story. And I can't. And I'll tell you why. Because Arlen is mean. If you're watching, you told me I could say that. He's not mean. The story that we have to skip over is so good it needs its own week. But that means I can't say it, and that's a bummer because it's a fun story. But it is next week, so come back and listen to it. He's not mean, it's just the way it all felt. But there's a great story we're gonna skip over. But after the story, Jesus is still in the back and forth talking to people. So we're gonna jump past that to John chapter 8 and verse 12. Jesus spoke to the people once more and said, "I am the light of the world. If you follow me, you won't have to walk in darkness, because you will have the light that leads to life." Once again, Jesus is saying, here, let me use a different illustration to hope you get it. I've already told you I'm the living water. When I fed a bunch of people, I told them I'm the bread of life. Now I'm looking at you and saying, I am the light of the world. He's like, do you ever just feel like the world is dark? Or your world is dark and you're just stumbling around trying to find meaning, trying to find reasons. You just don't know what's going on. He's like, I can help. What you're looking for is light, and I am the light of the world. You won't have to be in darkness if you come to me. And the response is ridiculous to me. The Pharisees replied, verse 13, "You are making those claims about yourself. Such testimony is not valid." It's like, well, you're just saying things about yourself, and I don't believe you if you're just talking about yourself, because that's not cool. And they really did say it that way. It's in the Hebrew. It's in the Greek. Just with that tone and everything. They're just mean. And I'm like, if Jesus' amount of grace right here, because Jesus over and over again has already said in verses that we've seen, verses that we've skipped, he's like, what are you talking about? He's like, I've already told you, you look at the scriptures and they point to me. You study Moses, you study the prophets, it's all there. He's like, forget that, okay? You had John the Baptizer, the guy that you hated before you hate me. He pointed at me and said, look, there's the guy, there's the Lamb of God, he's the one. That wasn't enough for you. He's like, I've done all of these miracles, all of these works I've done. Dead people are back to life, sick people are healed, hungry people are fed. All this is going on. And at some point, my Father has even said from heaven, hey, that's my boy. What else do you need? But that's the thing. Jesus understands, and he's going to put his finger on their problem. Verse 23, Jesus continued, "You are from below. I am from above. You belong to this world. I do not." Now, this is not just Jesus saying, look, you're here, I'm here. He is. This is not just Jesus saying, well, you're not so special, I'm really special. He is, but that's not his point. He's saying, you are so focused and worried about just your world, this time, this place, what happens to you. You're so focused on all this, and I'm not. I've got a different point of view. I've got a different perspective. I'm looking at things a different way. And unless you do, there will be a problem. Verse 24, Jesus continues, "That is why I said to you that you will die in your sins. For unless you believe that I am who I claim to be, you will die in your sins." He's like, you've got to change your mind. And instead of saying, oh, okay, makes sense, they respond, verse 25, "Well, who are you?" they demanded. And Jesus looks like, the one I've always claimed to be. I'm not the one changing my mind. I've told you over and over who I am. I'm the bread of life. I'm living water. I'm the light of the world. All of this stuff. I've explained it to you. And then Jesus says something that I don't want to skip past because it's really good and it's good for us too. Verse 26, "I have much to say about you and much to condemn, but I won't." A, if somebody came up to me and said, Anthony, I have much to say to you and much to condemn, but I won't. A, I would be like, ow, that hurts. B, I'd be like, can you just tell me? Because obviously there's a problem. Can you tell me what it is? But Jesus is so awesome. He does something that a lot of us would be so much better off if we did, especially in a social media age. I have much to say. And I find a lot that I want to condemn. But I won't. It's better for me not to get dragged into that, because he's about to tell us that's not what he's here for. That's what he says. He continues, "For I say only what I have heard from the one who sent me, and he is completely truthful." He's like, I can get in the weeds with that. I can totally just start going back and forth with you. But that's not why I'm here. That's not why my Father sent me, and that won't move the mission forward. But even though he's saying it, verse 27, they still didn't understand that he was talking about his Father. So Jesus is like, okay, can I just make it clear for everybody listening? Just listen, please, to this. Verse 28, so Jesus said, when you have lifted up the Son of Man on the cross, then you will understand that I am he. I do nothing on my own, but say only what the Father taught me. Now, if you see those capitalized words, we'll get to that in a second, so we'll get to there. But I want you to understand that Jesus has often said, I'm going to die, I'm gonna rise again. He said this ahead of time. But he comes right out and says to them, I'm gonna die on a cross, and you will be part of it. He's just laying it out for them, that they are going to be partly responsible for what happens. When you do that, he says, you'll start hopefully to understand who I am and what this was all about. This is what the Father wanted. Verse 29, the one who sent me, the Father, is with me. He has not deserted me, for I always do what pleases him. He just lays it out. This is the future. This is what's coming, the cross. And when you see it, I hope you get it. And I imagine that John is sitting there writing this and feeling the tension of, I just wish they would have gotten it. And maybe we're reading it and saying, I wish they would have gotten it. Or maybe we have that face or that person in our mind that says, I just wish they would get it. And John gives us almost a little bit of a relief in this moment and lets us know, verse 30, then many who heard him say these things believed in him. And I imagine John writing it with a sense of relief, like, thank you. Somebody got it. That's why I'm writing this book, because I want people to get it. And Jesus takes a moment and he says, verse 31, to the people who believed in him. Verse 31, he says, you are truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings. He's like, I'm so glad you believe. That's what I want for you. But I want you to understand that there's more to come. I want you to stay faithful. Hold on, because he's told his disciples before, what are you going to do when it gets tough? He's like, great believing. That's a great first step. And let's keep going from there. Hold on to that. And then he makes a statement that has gone past the pages of scripture into pop culture and everywhere else. You may have heard it somewhere else, but here's where Jesus says it. Verse 32, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. He's looking at the people that believe in him and say, if you stick with me, you'll understand what the truth is. What you've been searching for. You've been searching for something that you couldn't put your mind around, but this is the truth of who I am and what I'm here to do is what's going to set you free. That's what I want for you is freedom. And that's awesome, but it touches a nerve because there is a whole cultural touch point and nerve in the Hebrew people about freedom and slavery. One of their big festivals of the year is Passover, celebrating when they used to be slaves in Egypt and were set free. And when somebody uses the term freedom, that bothers them. Not only from that reason, but right now, they aren't truly free. They want to think they are, but yet they're under the oppression of Rome. And they have been under the oppression of Rome or other empires off and on, mostly on, for the last few hundred years. And so that word freedom really, really hits them. And they push back. And there's some back and forth, and we're going to skip to verse 38. Jesus says to them, I'm telling you what I saw when I was with my Father. And here's where snarky Jesus comes in, just a little bit. I love snarky Jesus. It's kind of fun. Never mean, but just he's like, I got to say it a different way to get you to get the understanding. But you are following the advice of your Father. He's like, okay, I've already told you, my Father is God. You are somebody else's kid. And that's like, ooh, because their response is immediate. Our father is Abraham. So they were kind of holding on to Moses a lot, the kind of founder of the nation. They're like, ooh, this isn't doing it. Okay, Abraham, well, before slavery, Abraham's our father. Yeah, what you gonna do about that now? And Jesus, in his own awesome understated way, just looks at them and says, no, No, that is such a difficult thing. Have you ever been in an argument with somebody and you thought you made an excellent point and you're waiting for them to, ooh, and all they do is they look you in the face, just deadpan, like, no. Like, he says, for if you were really the children of Abraham, you would follow his example. He's like, let me tell you something. He's like, you don't look like him. How many of us, especially those of us who are older, have you ever done something and then you realize after, that was my dad. That was so my dad right there. Or have you said something maybe to your kids and you're like, how did my mom say that in my voice? It's just like, you know, those things. I do that. It's one of those things. I notice it often when I go to a restaurant and I'm ordering and just the way I interact, hand motions. And I know I'm not doing them on purpose. It was just, I watched my dad for so many years. And it just comes out. And it's like, oh, that's my dad there. And Jesus is looking at him and saying, okay, if your father was really Abraham, you'd look like him. But you don't remind me of Abraham at all. In fact, he continues, instead, you are trying to kill me. Because I told you the truth, which I heard from God. Abraham never did such a thing. So, you know, you are imitating your real father. It's like, okay, and this is not just, okay, you ever do this, hopefully not too much as parents. Like, when your kid's in trouble, you go to your spouse and say, your child did this? It's always my kid when they did something right, right? Did you see what my son did? He's awesome. Did you see what your kid did? Like, this is what Jesus is saying. Like, you, your father is different. And they are upset. So they've got to double down. They replied, we aren't illegitimate children. God himself is our true father. Like, okay, Moses didn't work. Abraham didn't work. Fine, God. God's our father. What are you going to do about that? The times infinity. Like, and Jesus is like, and he just, it's awesome. Here's what he does. Jesus told them, verse 42, if God were your father, okay, let's take your point and logic it out. If God were your father, you would love me because I have come to you from God. I'm not here on my own. He sent me. It's like, but you don't love me. So that kind of defeats the point. And because they just can't seem to whatever, he's gonna use a rhetorical question and then answer it. Verse 30, 43. Why can't you understand what I'm saying? Why is there this block here? It's because you can't even hear me. You have not even chosen to open up the possibility that what I'm saying could be right. You have so closed down and believed that it's only your way that you can't even begin to process this. And then he finally pays off what he's been setting up this whole time. He keeps saying, no, it's your real father. And then, oh, Abraham? No. God? No. He finally pays it off. Verse 44. You are the children of your father, the devil. And you love to do the evil things that he does. He was a murderer from the beginning. He's like, there's a family resemblance. And it's the devil. Okay, again, I hope we don't do this with our kids. I just like your mother. He has always hated the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, it is consistent with his character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. In the middle of putting down their argument and kind of putting them down a little bit, he kind of gives the devil his due. He's like, the thing I got to give you about the devil, though, he always lies. He's consistent. It's like if you ever watch Pirates of the Caribbean, Jack Sparrow at one point says, a dishonest man you can always trust to be dishonest. This is what Jesus is saying. Like, you just remind me of your dad because he always lies. You must be the devil's kids because you always lie and you hate people and you want to murder them. I'm just saying who you remind me of. And that did not go well, as you can imagine. So all this talk of lies and truth, Jesus comes back and decides, I'm just going to tell you the truth. I've already told you, you love lies, but I'm going to tell you the truth. Verse 51, I tell you the truth. Anyone who obeys my teaching will never die. He puts it out there, and they think they've found their opening. You ever have that? You're in a debate, and you're like, I'm losing. There's my shot. And they think they have it. So the people said, verse 52, now we know you're possessed by a demon. Because even Abraham and the prophets die. But you said, anyone who obeys my teaching will never die. Again, it's in the Greek, the tone. It's the tone. You have to have it important. Are you greater than our father Abraham? Again, he died, and so did the prophets. All these people that you say, oh, they knew me and they talked about me, they're all dead. What happened? What's so great about your teaching? Who do you think you are? And the grace of Jesus in this moment is amazing. Imagine going up to God and saying, who do you think you are? Because if I were God, I'd be like, phew, that's who. Conversation over. It's just, but Jesus doesn't do that. In fact, he's going to accept their premise for just a minute. Verse 56, he says, okay, you can't get past the spiritual thing, so let's go to your physical father, Abraham. Your father, Abraham, rejoiced. As he looked forward to my coming, he saw it and was glad. He's like, you want to say like you're Abraham. Okay, I'm just going to tell you. Abraham knew I was coming. He looked forward, he saw it, he knew about it, and it made him happy. You're living in it, and it makes you mad. That's the difference between you and your father, Abraham. The people said, you aren't even 50 years old. How can you say you've seen Abraham? And Jesus is about to end the conversation with something awesome. Jesus answered, I tell you the truth. Before Abraham was even born, I am. This is the thing. We've seen this a couple times. I am capitalized. What Jesus is referencing is a couple things. First, he's referencing way back in the beginning when they were set free from slavery. God had set Moses, had called Moses, and Moses is talking to God and saying, okay, I'll go do what you say, or I'll argue with you about it in a minute. But first of all, I need to know your name. You see, Moses is like, I grew up as an Egyptian, and all their gods have names. I know their gods' names. But you want me to go to your people and tell them that you sent me. I don't know your name. What's your name so I can tell them? And God says to Moses, you just tell them, I am. I am that I am, and I am has sent you. Go, and that's enough. So he's addressing that. Also, he's just looking at it and saying, okay, can I just be clear? You're the whole, you're not 50 years old. He's like, you have no idea what you're dealing with. Before Abraham was, not before Abraham was, I was. Like, I came first. No, he's before Abraham was, before he was a thought in his father's eye, I am present tense. There is no past for me. There is no future for me. I just am. And on top of that, I am self-sufficient. I do not need anything from anywhere or anyone else to be who I am. I just am. And if you're like, I wonder if they got it. They got it. Not in the good way, though. Verse 59, at that point, they picked up stones to throw at him. But Jesus was hidden from them and left the temple. Now, I don't know how, when it says he was hidden from them, there's a couple different ways I can picture this going. My favorite way to think about this is that Jesus' disciples have been around and listening, and they hear him say that, and they're like, ooh, that's not going to go well. And they see people reaching around and picking up rocks. So they kind of surround him, and they're like, okay, guys, thanks for coming. Make sure you see the giving boxes. We're not even going to sing a closing song. We'll see you. Don't know when. Jesus, yeah, go. Maybe that's how it went. Maybe it was a Jesus miracle thing of they didn't go blind, but they just couldn't see him. Fourth option I didn't think about until maybe he just did John Cena. You know, it's like, you can't see me. I don't know. Or maybe it was just they turn around, they find rocks, and in the meantime, Jesus just moves into the crowd and they can't find him, and they're not just going to throw rocks at whomever. Whatever happens, this conversation's over. And at this point, I would love to tell you a story, but I can't because of what we talked about earlier. So you're going to have to come back in a few more weeks for that story because it's another awesome one. But continuing on into John chapter 10, lest you think that all of this that Jesus has been doing, especially that last part, I'll tell you what, I am, unless you think that he is on some kind of power trip, I don't want you to get that from Jesus. He's trying to get them to understand. And what he's trying to get them to understand, we're going to see in John chapter 10, verse 14. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep, and they know me. Just as my Father knows me, and I know the Father. so I sacrifice my life for the sheep. He's like, don't get me wrong. I'm not here for a power trip. I'm here to give of me for what they need. Even the people that won't listen to me and want to throw rocks at me, because I've already told them they're going to put me on a cross. I'm still going to love them then. But I came to sacrifice my life for the sheep. And he's going to say something. I don't have a lot of time to spend on this, but I have to hit it. Verse 16. I have other sheep too, Jesus says, that are not in this sheepfold. I must bring them also. They will listen to my voice, and there will be one flock with one shepherd. This is, we're going to get to this in a while, but Jesus is saying there's been so much about who is in the right because of how they, who they were born to. And I'm here. I'm not just sent, as he'll say later, I'm not just sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Yes, I'm there first. But what I am starting, what I have in mind, there are other sheep and they're going to listen and they're going to come and it's going to be amazing because they're all going to be together. One flock, one shepherd. It's going to be everything that my Father and I wanted from the beginning. He saw a future where Jew, Gentile, Greek, everybody would be part together. And we'll get to that soon. Back to John. The Father loves me because I sacrifice my life so I may take it back again. No one can take my life from me. I sacrifice it voluntarily. It's like, don't get it wrong. Don't get it wrong. Don't worry. Don't look at me and say, Jesus, you're going to go too far. They're going to kill you. He's like, they can't unless I let them. It's my choice. It's going there, yes. But it's my choice to sacrifice voluntarily. For I have the authority to lay it down, to lay my life down when I want to, and also to take it up again. For this is what my Father has commanded. That's what I'm here to do, what my Father wants to do. There's one more passage we'll look at. And John takes this to, I think, help us understand everything we've seen so far. But it happened a little later, and he wants to make sure that we understand exactly. So we're going to still be in John chapter 10, verse 22. John tells us it was now winter, and Jesus was in Jerusalem again at the time of Hanukkah, the festival of dedication. He was in the temple, walking through the section known as Solomon's Colonnade. The people surrounded him and asked, "How long are you going to keep us in suspense? If you are the Messiah, tell us plainly." And I've got to imagine, have you ever seen the meme face palm Jesus? Like, just like, how many times? But he's going to explain what's going on in a way that they hopefully could get it and hopefully will understand it today. Jesus says, verse 25, "I have already told you, and you don't believe me. The proof is the work I do in my Father's name." Jesus, like, you don't have an information problem. You are not short of the knowledge that you need to do what you need to do. You just won't. You are not choosing to believe. I've already told you, and I've laid it out with all the proof, all the works. You can look at it, but you won't. But you don't believe me, verse 26, because you are not my sheep. And at that point, I read it, I'm like, okay, I don't want that to be me. I want to be in. What does it take? What do I have to do? What do I have to be? Just in my own way, tell me plainly, what do I have to do? And Jesus tells them and tells us, and John made sure to write it down so we would see it. Verse 27, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me." He's like, you want me to tell you what gets you in? My sheep, they know my voice. They listen, and I know them. I have a relationship with them. And then more than that, once that's all settled and in place, they follow me. That's what it means. What's the result when that happens? Verse 28, "I give them eternal life, and they will never perish. No one can snatch them away from me. Why? For my Father has given them to me, and he is more powerful than anyone else. No one can snatch them from the Father's hand. When Jesus says, my dad is bigger than your dad, it is not hyperbole. He's just stating fact. He's like, they're safe because that's what the Father wants. And lest you be confused, verse 30, the Father and I are one. We're one in purpose. We're one in what we're doing. We are completely in agreement at this, that this is what's going to happen. So through all these verses, through all these things, John has said, when I started this section of my book, the big question in everyone's mind is, who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? And Jesus has spent time after time saying, you want to know who I am? I'm the bread of life. I'm the living water. I'm the light of the world. I am. I'm the good shepherd. And so what we're left with is not this question that we have to answer. Because the proof's laid out. The question that we have to answer is this: do you believe Jesus? Do you believe? Jesus said, that's the whole thing. You know who I am, I've told you. It's just whether you believe. And so I ask you the question, do you believe Jesus? Now, here's the thing. I'm not so silly to not understand where we are this morning. We're in church on a Sunday. You're watching online. So obviously, there's a right answer, an expected answer. Of course we believe Jesus. Hence, we have come. That's the right answer. That's the expected answer in church. So can I ask it in a different way, a way that Jesus pointed out? Simply this. Do you follow him? That's the mark. That's the answer to the question, do you believe Jesus? It's, do you follow him? Remember, this is what Jesus said. My sheep listen. I know them. We have a relationship. And they follow me. What does it mean to follow Jesus? First of all, it means that relationship that he talks about, where he knows you and you know him. At some point, it's saying, Jesus, all those things that you claim to be, yes, I accept and believe that that's who you are. And I want what you're giving. I am tired of being hungry and thirsty inside and feeling like I'm walking in darkness and just not knowing. I want that. And you start that relationship. Jesus is like, awesome. Remember, that's what he said to the people that believed in him. That's awesome. Now that we're here, now what I want you to do is remain faithful to my teachings. The following doesn't stop when you say, yes, Lord. It keeps going to all the other times. He wraps it up later. We'll see it in a few months where Jesus says, all the commands, you want to know what I'm teaching, what I'm telling you to do, what it means to follow me? Love one another the way that I've loved you. The way I sacrifice, the way I lay myself down, that's what I'm asking you to do for someone else. That's what it means to follow Jesus. Whatever step you're in this morning, if you're at the spot where that following means start a relationship, do that this morning, please. If it means, like, I'm already there, but there's that thing where you know that's what Jesus wants you to do. It's like, I don't know if I want to follow there, if I could just put it this way. I say, do you follow him? If we don't do what Jesus says, do we really believe that he is who he said that he is? If your boss came to you and said, hey, I want you to do this, and you're like, no. Are you treating him like the boss? In earthly terms, might not be your boss very long. But Jesus, like, what I'm asking you to do is understand that, yes, I want to have a relationship with you. I want to give you all this, but I want you to follow me because just like my Father and I are working together to reach the world, I want you to join us in that. Follow me in that sacrificial love that says, who can I love? Who can I serve? Who can I point to the God that I say I believe in? That's what it means to follow Jesus.